Have people asked you why you didn't leave? They certainly did ask me. But people who have never been abused or have never been gaslighted in a relationship, have never had their core ripped from their soul, they don't understand that this is not just another breakup. There are many reasons that victims don't leave. Fear is one of them. Fear of the unknown future, fear of being alone or being unlovable. If they're in a religious situation, being judged by the religious community, often told that you should stick it out and just make things work, and that it's somehow your fault if you've decided to get out. Immigrant status is another reason that people stay. Because if they leave, they are being threatened that they will be turned in. Another reason people stay is the helplessness to raise the children or the fear of physical abuse. If we believe that our children need two parents, we're willing to stick it out. We're willing to try. We're hoping for that person that we used to know and we used to see glimpses of. The reality is that they aren't there. They never were, and they never will be. Financial concerns are another reason that people stay. They might not have the money. They might have been financially dependent on their partner and not know how to live or where to live or how they will take care of themselves or their family. Feelings that people experience are helplessness, being trapped, fear of failure, and being shamed that they had something to do with this being a failure. So let's listen to my guest today, Christine Milstead, and she's going to tell us about why people stay. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I would love for you to introduce yourself a little bit to my audience by maybe telling us and sharing with us what little part of your story of how you learned about narcissists or if you had one in your life.
Well, I was in a relationship with a man who... let's just say he had multiple other relationships going on, and I didn't find out about them until we had been together for about 18 months. One of them, he was engaged to somebody else. We were living together at the time. He was also having other relationships. He was very cruel to me when I found out that I knew about them. I ended up going online and reading about narcissism. It still took me another 2.5 years to completely extricate myself from this person. And it's been a long road, and just sort of writing about it helped me understand, and actually it helped me get away from him as well. Just sort of putting my own narrative to it. And I've found that it was a way for me to regain my reality and get out of his reality in a way, because he had his own version of, and trying to put his version on what was happening. And that was a way of keeping me in the relationship. And by sort of reclaiming, no, this is actually what's happening, that was helping me to get out of the relationship. And so that led me to just keep writing about it. And that's why I started my blog, was sort of to reclaim reality and say, no, this is what happened. And so
did he do a lot of gaslighting to you?
That... Oh yes. Almost constantly. That was a big thing in the relationship. And I still, to this day, get triggered when I feel like somebody's gaslighting me. To this day, it's still a big trigger for me.
Well, it's a very, you know, once we've been trapped by gaslighting and you realize how your brain is really wondering, is this really happening? Is what he's saying or she's saying the truth? And I'm just like forgetting reality.
It really
hurts people.
Right, it does. And the thing is, part of you knows it's not the truth, but you want to believe this person. And you also start to doubt yourself. And the longer it goes on, the more it's done to you, the more you doubt yourself. And it gets to where you no longer know anymore what is real. And and the less judgment you have over other areas of your life as well, because you stop trusting your own ability to make good decisions for yourself, and so you just come to rely on you just come to rely on what he says, because it's too hard to try to make I guess what I'm trying to say is, if every time you have to fight in your brain to figure out, is this real or is it not real, it makes you too anxious, too exhausted to try to figure it out. So you just get to the point to where you just accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it carries over to other areas of your life too.
Absolutely, because it makes us insecure on every single level. So if we can't be secure in our own mind as to what is reality and what isn't, then it's really hard to go to a job and be secure in what your decisions you're making and choices that you're making, because everything is like, it's surreal. You're just like... Yeah. And it always comes back. Every decision you make after that, you're sort of like, was that real? Was this real? Or is everybody trying to gaslight me?
Right. You stop trusting other people as well, or you start wondering if they have ulterior motivations. And, you know, and what else you're saying is, like, even at work, you start to doubt decisions you're making in other cases too. It does start to erode your self-esteem, you know, your judgment in decisions that you're making. And it's sort of, I believe that that's one of the reasons why we do stay, because we get isolated from, you know, other people's opinions about things, and we stop trusting other people's opinions about things. We start relying on our partner's opinions, because they tell us, you know, certain things, and then, you know, other people can't be trusted, only they can be trusted. And then we stop trusting ourselves. And then we go out into other places, and we lack the ability to trust anything. And so we don't know what to trust. And over time, it just has a really, I think, devastating ability to allow us to make good decisions for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think, based on what I've read, it does change the neural pathways in our brain and shrink the amygdala, so that in terms of making executive functioning decisions for ourselves, it becomes really difficult to do.
Wow. I had never heard that. That's awesome. I mean, it's awesome to know. It's not awesome that it happens, but I never knew that it could have that kind of long-lasting effect.
Yeah. I sort of became... I won't say obsessed, but just really curious, why was it so difficult for me to get out of this relationship? And, you know, you hear this phrase, no contact, a lot. What is no contact? I feel it. When I say it took me 2.5 years to extricate myself from this relationship, I don't mean we never broke up. We broke up, you know, dozens and dozens of times. And I think that's pretty normal, you know, from what I've read in all the people that I've talked to, is, you know, you break up, you get back together. Sometimes it's you doing it, or, you know, me, you know, the person in the relationship. No, I can't take this anymore. I'm leaving. And then, you know, they hoover you back into the relationship. Sometimes it's them, you know, silent treatment. They go away for a while. And, but, you know, you keep coming back together. And, you know, I would think to myself, why am I getting back in this relationship? Why can't I just stay away? And so that still haunted me after. Why did it take me so long? And so I was just in the search for answers. And there are some very good, I think, reasons for that. I think part of the abuse itself is that it hides the abuse from us. It hides the fact that we're being abused from us. We don't think of it as abuse in the beginning. We're not even aware that we're being abused. And that's part of the abuse. Is we have to become aware that we're being abused, and we have to accept that it's abuse. We don't want to, because we want to see this person in a positive light. And that's part of, you know, the game they play with us, with the gaslighting, you know, as you're saying, they're telling us, no, that's not really what's going on. You're imagining things. You're just being too sensitive. That's not what you heard, or, you know, that person is just a friend, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, the millions of things that they tell us. And, you know, we're trying to figure it out, And it all starts at the beginning, you know, with all the love bombing they do, this positive image that they put in our heads that's so hard to change. It's so resistant to change. And so it's becoming aware that there is this other stuff going on under the surface and understanding the magnitude of it, you know, by the reading that we do, the people we talk to, and then accepting. We have to accept, okay, there is this other thing. But, and then even after that, I feel like there's still a part of us that has to overcome it, because even with the acceptance, you know, like I was saying, there was that part of me that would say, why can't I get away? You know it's not good for you. You know you don't want to be there anymore, but still there's that part of you that cannot break off. And I think that's where the trauma bond and, you know, the Stockholm syndrome comes in, because you feel like you can't get away no matter where you go. He or she, if you're in a relationship with a woman, can always find you. They're always going to come back. You're never going to get away from them. Potentially, you know, there's the possibility of getting physically harmed if you leave. You have all of these, you feel like you cannot overcome all the things that they have put it in your mind. You know, you may have feelings of blame or shame, that things that you may have done in the relationship that they have caused you to believe that you are at fault. And that's part of, you know, the abusive aspect of it too. All of these tactics that roll through your head about why you cannot leave the relationship. And so that also has to be overcome. It's like the awareness, the understanding, the acceptance, and now overcoming what they're doing. It's all this psychological stuff makes it so hard to get out. And like, once you just kick through that final layer of, now, no, I'm not to blame, you know, I'm getting out of here. I don't know, you know, this is not good for me. It's sort of like this final awareness of, if I do not leave this relationship, something really bad is going to happen. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's, you know, maybe you do know what it is, but I've got to save myself. Nothing is ever going to change, but something bad is going to happen if I don't get out of here. There's a lot of physical things that have to happen in the material environment, you know, depending on how enmeshed you were with them. You may live together, be married, have children. Those things have to be taken care of. But psychologically, you also have to take steps. No, I'm not ever going to interact with this person again, and sort of, you know, prepare yourself psychologically for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a really good segue, because what we're going to talk about today is, why do people stay? And you've already outlined some of the confusing parts about gaslighting and the screwed upness of our head when we're going through this with the Stockholm syndrome and wanting to not be abandoned. There's so many things that go into this, but let's talk about why people stay. Because all of our friends, all of the people that are watching this have a multitude of friends that just say, it's just a normal breakup. Get over it. Why are you dragging this on? Why can't you just leave and be done with it and find a new guy like that? There's a little bit more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it starts with the deception. I think that it's hard to explain that to if you're not in one of these relationships. My belief is that one of the big parts of being in a relationship with someone who is a narcissist, part of narcissistic abuse, is that deception itself is abuse, because that is part of what keeps someone in the relationship, is deceiving them to believe, hey, here's my mask of, you know, I'm really good, you know, good for you, and I love you, and this relationship is good for you. And that is sort of what keeps people there, you know, that initial stage of idealization and love bombing. And if I could only do this one thing right, they'll stay, they'll change. And that holding out the hope that they're going to change, and getting back to the way things were at the beginning of the relationship. And then, because of that initial stage and that love bombing, that belief and that hope in that person that they saw at the beginning, or that they believe is there, that then enables the abuser to do all kinds of horrible things after that and excuse them. And the person in the relationship with them will deny, suppress, rationalize all of that behavior too. And that's just normal that's just psychology. It's, it's just basic psychology. I mean, it's cognitive dissonance. It's when we hold two conflicting ideas in our minds, our brains will find a way to try to, reconcile those two beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to hold two beliefs that contradict one another's. And the one we held first is going to be the one that's the most resistant to change. Because when we hold several, when we hold one and then we pile others on top of it. So we've sort of built this foundation that we've been living on this belief. And so then here comes the second one. That one's easier to change. So we'll go back to the first one. If we had to change the first one, we have to uproot a lot more of our life. All these other beliefs have to change as well. It's a lot harder to change the first one. And especially when you have somebody that keeps coming in telling you, no, keep believing this one. This one's the real one. I just had a bad past, or I was just having a bad day, or, I just had too much to drink, or, they're just making up excuses for this person over here, but they're telling you this, the good person is the real one. And so you have somebody telling you this day after day after day for months. It's very, very hard for you as the person who just got sucked into this with having no idea on your own to come to the conclusion, no, this is not really what's going on. And to extricate yourself from that, especially when you add in the fact that, you have your neural pathways have been changed. If you've been traumatized, you now have damage to your amygdala and your prefrontal cortex, your neurotransmitter, dopamine, and the hormone, oxytocin have now been synced up with the intermittent reinforcement of the positive behavior and the negative behavior. So it's all these things are now going haywire in the brain, and you're still expected to come to the conclusion, that, okay, well, I should not be listening to this person that's been a major part of my life and just on my own leave. It's very, very difficult to do. It takes time to catch up with the fact that psychologically that I need to get out of this. This person is not good for me after all. I have to get out of this. I have to save myself. It takes time, mm-hmm. and support. And from an outsider's point of view, you can't see all this going on, but it takes time to get out of it. And I wish more people could understand that. And it's my hope that that can happen.
Well, you're going to be sharing this with the world, so we will all know this. I was recently at a domestic violence conference, and one of the slides that one of the organizations put up was, why do they stay? Mm-hmm. And the number one reason is love.
Yeah.
You think that person that used to be that beginning love bombing person, or even if it's a parent, that intermittent nice is the real person, and you're holding on because if you love them enough, that part will come back. If you love them enough, the bad behavior that they're doing right now, like, and the excuses, oh, I had too much to drink, so I slept and got engaged, all of these sort of things that you go, oh, that, I never did that when I got drunk, but you start to really weigh out all of the things that they've told you, and right. hold it up against this image of love and say, wait a second, he's telling me he loves me on the intermittent side, and there's an excuse for his bad behavior. And so people hold on to that, and they're afraid to be on their own. They're afraid to be without that person. There's a lot of other things that are going on here besides the brain fuckery that they've just done to us.
Yeah. So many things are going on. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's so easy for us to project ourselves onto the other person. I feel like as well, because we can't fathom doing something like that. So when we tell somebody we love them, we can't imagine doing it. These things. So we think, well, if they did it, there must be a reason for it. You don't do things to people that you love. So if they did that, there must be a good reason for it. And so we keep thinking of these reasons why it must have happened, because we can't fathom the idea that somebody that could tell us they love us that intensely could then go out and do these horrible things. The two just aren't compatible. And so, yeah, there are all of these rationalizations and reasons we keep trying to give it to make it make sense.
Absolutely.
And you're right. There are sometimes all of these other reasons that we have in our backgrounds that will help push us along to these rationalizations as well.
Right. And shame. I mean, for me, I didn't want to be alone. On my second marriage, I was now divorcing. I didn't want to be alone. And I was scared of the unknown and scared of being alone at 50 something years old. How am I going to start again? The fear that holds you bound, that this is good enough, or I can tolerate this.
Yeah.
It's not normal things that we can tolerate when you're dealing with someone that has an abusive personality.
Right, exactly. Sandra L. Brown, who wrote Women Who Love Psychopaths, yeah, she talks about this a little bit in her book. She says that one of the ways to resolve that cognitive dissonance, she talks about that's one of the things that is one of the symptoms that's the most disturbing that she saw of the women that she counseled that were coming out of relationships with psychopaths was the cognitive dissonance, because even after they left, it still remained. How could he have loved me and done these things? It didn't disappear just because they left.
Yeah.
And so she said, one of the things that you have to do as someone in one of these relationships is come to terms with what is it that keeps you from accepting the fact that this is not a good person who loved you the way that you thought that he or she did.
Or that you deserve to be loved.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Is it the fact that you invested all the time in the person, and if you let go of that you would have to face the fact that, you know, that time is actually gone and start over again? Is it the fact that you are afraid of being alone? Is it the fact that something that he or she put in your head that you, if you let go of the person, you'll never love anybody else again? You know what? You know, like you said, that you don't deserve somebody who's going to treat you right. You know, what is it that won't enable you to resolve the cognitive dissonance in your favor instead of, you know, the psychopath's favor? And she says that's one of the keys to letting that go and letting go of the abuse is, you know, figuring out what is at the core of not resolving that cognitive dissonance in your favor.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so confusing. When I was seeing a therapist through my divorce, he didn't even know what cognitive dissonance was. So how could he possibly have helped me to see that there was a difference in the story? Yes, you've got the story that's there, and then you've got the reality that's here. And it was such a disconnect, because you didn't want to believe the reality. You wanted to believe the fairy tale. You wanted to believe the excuses. You wanted to believe that the person that you were with was the person you thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, cognitive dissonance, I feel like, is just, it's something that we all encounter, you know, on a regular basis. I use this example a lot. Like, if I want to have ice cream, I have to think about, do I really want that ice cream today? Because, you know, I told myself I'm not going to eat ice cream because it's not that healthy for me. So, you know, I sort of have to put those two ideas together and say, well, normally, you know, when I do things like that, I say, well, I guess it's okay to eat it every once in a while. Or if I eat it today, I just go back to not eating it tomorrow. You know, those are the ways that we normally would reconcile cognitive dissonance. And we don't even do it consciously. It's just something we just sort of do. So, and I think it's a good idea to make sure. The reason why I like to say things like that is because it's important, I think, to point out that anybody can, you know, get fooled by somebody who has some of these characteristics. And, you know, in just an everyday situation, you know, you may have friends who are like this, or family members who are like this, or coworkers who are like this. And you may be thinking, they seem like a nice person, but that didn't quite match what I thought, you know, the kind of person I thought they were. And, you know, if you see this on a regular basis, you know, it doesn't mean you have to say, well, they must be a psychopath, or, you know, but that might just be a warning sign that, just, you know, they're toxic maybe, or you just don't want to be around them. But I think, you know, these are just things we don't talk about, you know, on a regular basis. And,
well, I think too, I think I can use an example of my ex-mother-in-law and my ex-family telling me what a close family they were. Mm. That was something I now know I was looking for. I wanted a good family structure. And so they would tell me how close they were, how they would die for one another. And now that I was in the family, they would die and do anything for me. Mm-hmm. But the reality was, and it was so confusing, whenever we were together and we traveled all the time together, they were fighting like cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the grandfather hit the sister at a dinner table at a 5-star restaurant. I'm like, where's the closeness here? I'm confused. But all of these actions were not adding up. And I just sat there going, all right, close family, that's what they're selling me. But the actual reality is they're crazy. And I would just go, but, and then they would reinforce me. If I called out to my husband and said, you know what your mother did, or what this just happened, like, that's not right. You know, then the love bombing cycle would begin again, and he would whisk me away from that situation by changing the subject, doing something nice, going to buy me a bauble. It was like, I began to go, I'm starting to feel like I'm being bought just so I don't get an answer.
Right.
But again, no one ever said this is cognitive dissonance. It's just things not adding up. And it's my intuition, like with a little flag, weep, this isn't normal. But we start to learn the language, and if we start to look these things up, like you said, you hyper-learned. I'm still hyper-learning. I have Sandra Brown's book on my bed. I have another one over here. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I can't get enough information. And I'm 3 years out of, you know, learning about all of this. And I think, to me, education is key, and everyone's going to have a different journey on that.
Yeah, definitely.
But if they stop it too early and just go, okay, I figured out what a narcissist is, we're good, I can go out and date the next person. Yeah. The reality is you haven't done the work to understand about cognitive dissonance, about being lied to, about being fooled. I mean, all of the things that can just happen like that the next time. In fact, by telling your story, when you meet the next Mr. or Mrs. Wright, and you start to tell them, oh my goodness, you should see what I learned. And they actually get the script for how to further abuse you. I mean, they're probably like going like this, look at that, I can get away with that. So we have to be really careful, and that's why the education and taking the time to heal. Most people don't want to heal and don't want to take a long time, and the encouragement of their well-wishing friends to just move on, get over it, it gets people stuck, and it puts them into a vulnerable situation like I was, to be re-injured and to be found by, I'd call them a higher level narc, someone that was a professional and, you know, that knew all the ways to manipulate people.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. If you feel like you know it all and know what you're looking for. I also feel like if you feel like the problem is in you and you heal yourself and then you go, let me start again. Feel like the problem was only in you or certain kinds of people, and then you heal yourself, but didn't learn enough about what to look for, and then you go out, but you feel like you've totally healed, and you just, it's almost like you're just opening yourself up to it again, because even if you've done all of the work, like a lot of the experts, like Robert Hare says, even the experts can be fooled, so there is work to do, And a lot of it has to do with, you know, some of the things you're talking about, looking at your vulnerabilities and your own weaknesses. But it's a double, you know, it's also making sure you learn, you know, what it is that they are doing and looking for in, you know, the red flags and the ways to manipulate. And that's, I had never thought about that, but that is a very good point that thinking you know enough and then telling your story is a good way to find a higher level narcissist who may also already know the, you know, all the stories and the ways that people would know. And so they know the ways to get around, you know, what people are looking for. And so they're even better at manipulating. So,
oh yeah. You're giving them the script of what you've allowed before and what you went through before, even though they're acting all sympathetic and, oh, I understand. Oh, probably me too. I get it. But reality is they're sitting there taking notes going, uh-huh, I could do that.
Yeah. I've heard that before, to be careful who you tell details of the story to, in that people who are very interested in the minutiae of the story are usually, there's a reason why they're very, very interested in the details of the story. Mm-hmm. And so I think I learned that lesson myself. There was a female who was very interested in the details of the story who I thought was a friend, who didn't wind up being very much of a friend, and ended up, you know, using details of the story with a friend group and trying to turn various members of us against each other. And
so a little flying monkey
to each other about it. Yeah. But I became aware that, yeah, it was, yeah, what didn't end up being a future boyfriend or anything, but yeah, a female who I told quite a bit of the story to. So I learned that lesson, but I think it's a good lesson is be careful of people who are that interested in the details of a story of you being abused when you don't know them very well, or, you know, or you're first getting to know them. Especially it's a lot different if you've been in a relationship with them for a very long time and you're getting to, you know, vulnerable with each other most likely. But yeah, but you know, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Thank you. I would love for you to tell us about your new document that you have on your website.
It's called Taking Your Life Back After a Relationship with a Narcissist. I started working on it a couple of months ago. It's funny because I started this blog for myself last year. Well, I started writing a couple of years ago, actually, just for myself and writing down what was happening as I just kept interacting with my ex-boyfriend. And after he and I cut off contact for good, I had kept writing, but then there was something about putting it on a blog where anybody could read it, because he had told different people in our relationship things, or outside our relationship, things that weren't even true about us and about what had happened. And I felt like I didn't get a say on anything, and I felt so silenced. And I didn't even care if anybody read it. It was just, I wanted to say what happened, and I would just write, like, this is a part of what happened here. This is a part of what happened here. And it was just very healing, and I didn't even think or intend anybody would write it or read it. And some of it was me just working out something that happened, like, did he really love me? I don't care. I don't know. Here's why I think he might have cared. Here's why I think he might not have cared. And then sometimes in a forum, I would link to something that I wrote or a question I wrote. And then I realized people were starting to read it and respond to me or email me, and I would email them. And that's how I started meeting people. And it was very, very healing to speak with everyone. And just, I just began to write more and more. And I just started reading everything I could get my hands on to try to answer the questions. And I felt like as I was learning things, I wanted to write about what I was learning and explain, here is how I got here, in case this helps anybody else. Here is where I am. Here's how I got here. And so that was a kind of long way of saying I wanted to put a bunch of things together in that document, rather than all the articles are kind of scattered bits and pieces of that. And so the document is taking some of those articles and expanding them and also adding on to them with some things that I did, like writing down, okay, if I get the urge to contact them, don't do it, and here's why. And so it's a place to really put that in the document, and some other things that I actually did that I thought might help people. And if it helps, that's wonderful. I hope it does. I want it to help people. There are so many things out there on, you know, online and, you know, in books that can help people. And I feel like if mine is one more, if mine can contribute to helping someone else get out of one of these relationships, good. That's great. I feel like the more voices can contribute to getting people out of that lost place, because I remember what that was like. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. That's my goal. So I finally finished it and put it out there about a week and a half ago. So that's what the document is about. It's about three parts. It's about preparing to take your life back. And then the other two parts are about the two things that I feel like really need to happen in order to do that, which is going no contact and then stopping psychologically idealizing the narcissist partner, which is sort of kind of what we were talking about, resolving that cognitive dissonance in your favor. So those are the three parts.
Mm-hmm. And I have read it all, and it is free on your website. So we've got your website URL right below your name, and we'll put a link down below so anybody can go and download this document. And I'm telling you, it's worth reading. I have a lot of live meetup groups, and so many have been financially abused, and so many can't afford a book. And the help and the courses that they need to move forward. So this is a resource that they can download right now and, you know, sit there and gobble it all up, because your experience is so much like all of the others that it validates everything. And when I started this YouTube channel, I said, if I could save one person, if one person can learn something from my cray cray stories, mission accomplished. Exactly. And I just hit 500,000 views. So I'm getting the feeling that people are finding similarities in my stories, and I know they will in yours. So we'll point them to your blog. And I want to thank you so much for coming. And is there anything else that you want to say to close with, to give our audience a little bit of?
Well, I think I'd just like to say that I didn't think that I would ever reach the place to where I would feel like I could live happily without him in my life. It's sort of like being in free fall. When you're in the relationship, you can't envision what life will be like without that person. And then in those first few days, weeks after you're not in the relationship, it's sort of like a free fall. Like, I don't know how to feel. You're feeling everything. And one of the things you feel the most, or the things I felt the most, is you miss the person, you miss the connection. There's a feeling of loss, almost like you're bleeding out, because the person is gone. They have slowly eroded parts of you. They've gaslighted away your own you know, your own view of what's going on, and they've replaced it with parts of themselves. And so there's a part of you that they're not there, and there's part of you that's missing too, and you have to slowly grow that back. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do it is just feel that free fall for a little while. And I never thought I would get to this point, but things do get better, and it feels so much better than it ever did being with them. And life is so much brighter. Just that feeling of being out of the fog and the anxiety. Even though I still struggle with things that trigger me and the lingering effects of some of the trauma, I have had some therapy, some EMDR therapy. But even though I still deal with some of the effects of the being in the relationship, just knowing that I'm not in it anymore and having myself back and looking forward to the future is so much better than what I was feeling back then. And there is hope, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is there are so many people here on the other side that are willing to help and want to help.
I know. I get that, so many that get to the other side. We just want to give back. It's like we were probably this caring, loving person well before this happened, but they stole that. They took that away, and now we're conquering and taking back our own personal power to just have our voice heard and to help others. And so I'm really grateful that you have been able to spend time with us here today. But I have one more question that, as you were talking, I thought of. And I know that a lot of people, as this breakup and split of a relationship happens, and you've talked about no contact, we know that is absolutely, you can't move on until you don't see them anymore. And but there's a part that most survivors are very preoccupied with: what are they doing now? Mm. Are they moving on? Are they happy with the new person? Did they marry that other person? And you start to really feel for that. How did you deal with, that part of the puzzle?
Well, my situation, the last couple of times that I spoke with him, the way I finally got away from him, I had to basically push him away from me, not physically, but do things that would make me so unappealing to him, he would leave me alone. And that's one way to do it. I don't know, whatever that is in your particular relationship, whatever would make the person not want you anymore, that can work, at least for the time being. One reason I think that it's so effective is because if it gets them away from you for a little while, it gives a chance for the fog to clear and for you to say, oh my goodness, now I can catch my breath a little bit. And they're not in your ear telling you, oh, believe this part of me, the good part of me. And then it gives a chance for you to finally accept, just a little bit of who they are. But in those times, those last couple times we talked, I saw him speaking with, one of the other women and telling her, the same things that he was telling me. And so that sort of put this thought in my head. But, he would say, oh, I don't really mean it when I tell her. I just have to tell her, these things that she wants to hear. And I was thinking, okay, so then that means you're the kind of person who would do that, or you're lying to me, which means you're also lying to her, which means, wait a minute, you're not really the kind of person that I want to interact with. It's sort of like all these things have to go into your head. Mm-hmm. And so once I let that sink in, I realized I'm glad he's with her. I don't really want to deal with that. Because if he said, saying to me, I'm just telling her what she wants to hear, well, let her deal with that. So, exactly. Because whether she's lying or he's not lying, it's bad either way for her. So,
right. And there's a certain reality when you realize, like you just said, that that's his problem. And clearly that kind of person that's just willing to lie, and that means he's doing it everywhere. And right. The sooner you realize that they will always be the same. And mm-hmm. even if they've got the new girlfriend, the new boyfriend, and they look like they're so darn happy on Facebook, the yeah. reality is it isn't going to last. It's going to be the yeah. same horrible patterns, and that person will be a victim before they know it.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying. Because if he was putting all this on Facebook and saying this and saying, but then he's telling me something different, well, then that means it's not true. And then, so I'm just thinking, I don't want to deal with that anymore. And I'm glad it's not me. And so I guess what I'm saying for other people that want to get to that point, you can force yourself to confront, you know, look, they're saying the same things to them that they said to you. What does that mean? It means they're lying to them. You also have to face the fact that they're lied to you too. And it's painful. But look, mm-hmm. now you don't have to deal with it anymore.
Exactly.
That's what I went through too. It was painful. It was really painful. I had to face the fact, wait a second. If you're saying that to them, that means they're also saying it to me. That means they didn't mean it with me either. It's sort of like this thing you go through, but then it's like, but wait, I don't want somebody who did that saying it to them. Wait, it's their problem. It's not my problem anymore.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of once you realize that, you stop wanting to look at their social media. You don't want to watch the train wreck anymore, the three-ring circus.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm making it sound easy. It was not easy. There were days when I cried. There were still days when I missed, and I think, oh my gosh, I remember how much fun we had. I remember when we did this and that, and I cried over, you know, some of the times we had. And I know I let myself cry, and then I would do something else, and those times became less and less. I think, you know, I let myself grieve over it, and I tried to remind myself my feelings were real. I don't know, you know, what he was doing, you know, but you know, forget that. It's not my problem. Let them deal with it now. I don't have to be anxious over the fact of worrying about, does he mean it or does he not mean it? Oh, thank good. Not my problem anymore, because I saw all that. So if you're seeing them saying something on social media to somebody else, how could they say it to you 2 days before, or however long it was, and now say it to them if they don't mean it? So what, you know, you have to think about all the implications, and some of them might be very painful, but it can help you get over the line too. And, you know, some of the painful ones can also help you get over the fact that it doesn't matter what they're doing. Let things pass, and, you know, let it move on to, you know, mm-hmm. the next people, you know, that they're the fact that it's not going to change. So,
yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And we'll have everyone go download your sort of ebook. I mean, it's 60 something pages long. So it's a nice bit of information, and it reads really well. So hopefully they'll follow you on your blog and start to, you know, bring you some extra hope, knowing that you're helping more people.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So if you are thinking about leaving a narcissist, someone that is abusing you, please don't do it alone. Please don't think that you have all the tools to know the tricks that they're going to pull and the way that you have to protect yourself that is well beyond what your friends who have been divorced are going to have to do. On my website, narcissistabusesupport.com, I put a link down here. We have a leaving plan. I think it's about a 30-page plan workbook for you to remember to do things that might apply to your children, or to getting the data off your computer, to changing passwords. There's so much you need to know, and there's so much you need to do. So don't do it alone. Go visit my website. Thank you so much for watching today, and I look forward to seeing you next time. This is Tracy, and that is all I've got. Thanks.